Good morning.
Morning. Morning.
Last week, Shoujo gave me an article called Shock and Awe, Instant Zen. While wearing the electrodes, I felt calm and sharp, fearless and free of doubt. That's the caption. This is an article about experiments using electrodes with neurological feedback and electrical brain stimulation to create certain states of mind. And in a way, those states of mind are wonderful. The states of mind of being clear-headed, without fear, calm, without doubt. Temporarily, in other words, while the electrical stimulation goes on, those states of mind occur. And the person finds that, quote, relieved of the minefield of self-doubt that constitutes my basic personality, they were able to do all sorts of things. So it's very interesting to notice that kind of approach and calling that Zen. I talked about that last week. Shoujo might have heard a little of this, but I wanted to talk further about it because, in one sense, that occurs naturally as we sit. There's a certain calming of the states of mind, the mental, physical agitation. However, if we think that that's the purpose of practice, then what we end up doing is believing that the problems are with the specific characteristics, whether of ourself or of others. We end up believing that if only I stop these thoughts from arising, or I stop these physical conditions from arising, if I stop fear from arising, then things will work. And we try all sorts of things to accomplish that. Sometimes we try drugs, alcohol, being with certain people. Oh, they'll make me okay, then I won't feel fear. Having certain conditions exist in my life, having a certain amount of money, job security, etc., etc. Making sure I get all healthy food, then fear won't occur. Having enough. This person says it's like having an excellent cup of coffee and the caffeine stimulation without the caffeine jitters. All of those is believing that the conditions are what is responsible for how my life is, for whether I suffer, whether I feel stress or not. Unfortunately, no one can control the ongoing change of conditions and circumstances of life. We can't control the physical condition we are. We can't control who's going to be around us. We can't make sure that economic, financial, etc. conditions are going to stay any particular way. We can't even take drugs, alcohol, or other stimulants without side effects that are terrible, and without even their efficacy of changing our mental states will continue. And they don't know anything about the continued effects of this neural stimulation. This is just an experiment that they're trying. But this has always been our human tendency to look for something, whether it's outside or inside, that will get the world to be the way, quote, I want it, so that I'm okay. An ancient master, Wang Po, said, if you contemplate the Buddha, or you could say if you contemplate the awakened state, in terms of characteristics of purity, brilliance, and liberation, and if you contemplate sentient beings, in other words, states that are troublesome, in terms of characteristics of impurity, darkness, and samsara, samsara meaning the ongoing change and resulting suffering. If your understanding is such, due to the attachment to characteristics, you will never attain bodhi. You will never attain, if you want to say, the awakened life that we are. Even after passing through eons of time, there is only this one mind, and not the least bit of a dharma that can be attained. Dharma meaning phenomena, conditions. This very mind is Buddha. These days, students of the way do not see this mind, and they rouse the mind on top of the mind, look outward in search of Buddha, and undertaking practices in attachment to characteristics. These are all bad methods, problematic methods. These are all problematic dharmas, and not the path of bodhi. This is talking about, this text was written about 1200 to 1300 years ago. So this isn't new, except that the ways that we think we can attain certain characteristics, certain states, purity, brilliance, liberation, get rid of certain things that we think of, impurity and darkness, or the problems that are causing difficulties for us, change. But it's the fundamentally looking for something else, looking for specific sets of conditions to solve as the source of problems, and what's going to solve things, that will keep us from seeing and being who we are right this moment. It's believing that those particularities, those differences, those myriad forms are the problem. And not, if I say it in such a way, not seeing that this very, to use the word he uses, this very mind, this very moment being, is the perfection and wisdom of the Buddha, of our life, of bodhi. And that there's nothing lacking right this moment, except that we cling to some and reject other circumstances, except that we're not clear on ourself and others, and want to perpetuate a dualistic way of being, not being clear, we get into all sorts of trouble. So this instant Zen is another example of the idea that Zen, or our life, or the liberation of Bodhi, of awakened life, is exactly who we are, is exactly as we are this moment. And when there's something to do, it's just dealing with our attachment or self-centeredness that blinds us. But what we do is just the skillful medicine to enable us to take care of what's arisen right now. But there's nothing that needs to be fixed. There's nothing that's lacking right now of the perfection that you are. Okay. I bring this up just to get us started. Just to begin our exploration, clarifying practice, clarifying our life. So I'll just read one last quote from Wang Po, which is, "This mind is Buddha. Buddha is sentient being. As sentient being, mind is not lessened. As Buddha, mind is not increased. Mind is, really, it's not limited to the word that we tend to, conceptual, intellectual, cognitive. It's much bigger word than that. It's mind is Buddha, no other mind, no other Buddha. It's exactly what our life is. Or to use another expression, he says, mind is bright, pure, like space, without a single bit of shape. So, okay, I'll stop here and maybe we can explore. Maybe you don't agree with anything I said. That's fine too. And maybe there's something here that's of value in our practice life. Yeah.
Speaking from a little bit of personal experience, but not with electrodes in my head, although it does sound intriguing, but I would venture to guess, and this is all conjecture on my part, mm-hmm. but what those things, that sort of thing does is, it doesn't add something.
Mm-hmm.
It actually numbs or turns off something. Mm. And I can certainly say that about things like alcohol and drugs. The intended effect of doing those things is not to achieve a state of euphoria, but turn off the suffering that we think prevents us from being in a state of euphoria.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I have to say that the brain or human beings, unfortunately, from that perspective, adapt.
Adapt?
We adapt.
Oh.
You said the efficacy of drugs decreases. Uh-huh. Well, that's because we adapt to them. And we tend to unintentionally, biologically,
mm-hmm.
we tend to drift, gravitate back towards that point of equilibrium.
Which is
a combination of good feelings and bad feelings and all of the things that make us human. And none of that really is the problem.
Mm.
It's how we react, what we believe about those things that really causes the suffering.
So it's really what you're they holding on to the narrative, the chatter, the mental, physical agitation that appears.
Holding on and trying to push it away.
And in a way, it all sorts of practice, just like sitting. And there are other practices that can enable us to release for that chatter and narrative and agitation to settle and quiet. However, if we think that what we have to do is quiet those down rather than let them dissipate quiet of themselves, if we have to force those quiet and it's only then that we're okay, then we're constantly fighting that, and it's not possible to see clearly who we are, because we've got this idea that the chatter is the problem and the no chatter is the solution. This is exactly what Wang Po is talking about. We think these people are the problem, excuse me for pointing at you, and those people are okay. So when I'm with those people, I'll be okay, but when I'm with these people, I'm in trouble. And these people could be my family or not my family. You know, I've got the right family, but those friends there I've got to stay away with. Or this family's okay, but they're bringing in the other people that, and those other people are what's going to cause the problem. Or my body's okay right now, but what if tomorrow I wake up and XYZ happens? I'm not as strong as I was. I'm not as quick as I was. I start losing hair, or I get an accident. Then all of a sudden, the condition is what creates the suffering. See, and that's all part of this not seeing clearly, because then we do what everyone else is doing out there. They are looking self-centeredly for what's going to make me okay. And when it doesn't happen the way I want, should I get angry or greedy or just upset, confused, depressed because things aren't going the way I want? If I get what I want, I'm okay. If I don't get what I want, I'm not okay. And fundamentally, the nature of the universe is sometimes we get what we want, sometimes we don't. But getting what we want can't satisfy. Not getting what we want doesn't satisfy. Inherently, either that results in fear to make sure we hold on to what we think we need, or anger about getting what we think we shouldn't have, or variations on all of that. See, so in one sense, as a skillful practice tool, this neurological instant Zen might be another particular form of practice that can be used skillfully. Can be, just like Zazen. Maybe, temporarily. It'll give you an interesting sense of what it's like to have the mind chatter quiet down, especially someone who's never had that happen to them. And there are people who never find that, just like Zazen can become that. But if our practice ends when we get up from Zazen, if our practice ends when we get up, disconnect the neurological wires and the mind chatter starts up again, then it's not much use. Because the nature of this human life is ongoing change. So really what we have to start seeing is that it's not a matter of the characteristics. It's always being this present moment, or to use the expression, this one mind. This one mind with no dharmas to attain and no dharmas lacking. So how do we, right here, live fully who and what we are. That's always the practice question. But I'm talking too much again. So I will stop and see what, if any of this might connect with your life and something you want to bring up.
I'll just say that something you said maybe years ago works for me in the sense that trust what is. You know, whether it's something you don't want or you didn't think should happen or something that it's okay. But whichever it is, just trust what is. And, I mean, it's all going to work out.
Yes. And when we can't trust, when we can't be open to see what practice effort is called for, what's skillful at this moment when I'm feeling not open, not trusting, or upset, anxious, angry, or whatever reaction, whenever we notice it. And that's and it's important in the specifics to be able to notice when that comes up, because that's when we can do something. And yet at the same time, the quiet settledness of Zazen is a base that enables us to do it throughout our life, whether it's from our daily sitting or sitting a little longer, like on a Saturday when you do it, or even longer when we do a sesshin, a retreat. Those are all opportunities to deepen our practice and then to carry it along throughout our day. Because fundamentally, you are nothing but this mind, this life, this awakened perfection, except when we don't believe that, when we are, if I use a fancy word, deluded and attached. But those are just fancy words. It's more the specifics, like when we notice how upset we are that someone is wearing something or not doing something, or how fearful we are when, and you fill in.
What if when you are fearful, anxious, and you know you are, but you do things like not sit, but read a book where there's a whole different reality, or watch a movie where there's, where it doesn't even seem like you're in your life. You recognize you're stressed, but instead of, you know, just trying to escape it.
Well, that's okay. I mean, it's not a matter of adding judgment. I should, you know, doing what you think is skillful and appropriate then, or doing as best you can then. And, you know, when you notice you're doing it, you could continue to do it, enjoy the movie. Or you could say, oh, this is harmful. I really don't want to do this. Well, you could stop it. Sometimes we notice we do something and it's, you know, the consequences. You know, you had two drinks and you say, I don't need to drink anymore. I'm just getting more and more loaded. This isn't any good. Okay, fine. No added, it's not a matter of judgment of what you did, how well you saw. Read a book, fine, no problem. Learn from that. Learn from the book. All sorts of things are useful. Everything is an opportunity to live this life that we are, this way that's manifesting as our life. So it's not a matter of judgments. Sometimes we can sit, or sometimes we could do what we're doing, being wholly present, you know, whether it's taking a walk or whether it's washing the dishes. Those are just as good as anything else. It's a matter of giving ourselves away to exactly what we're doing. Otherwise, we're just creating, as he says, picking that there's purity and not purity. You know, that there's movies are bad, but something else is good.
But you could decide not that it's good or bad, but that maybe it's not always skillful to do a certain thing instead of dealing with your anxiety.
Yes. Then when you see it, when you notice you're feeling anxious, you can be present and see what's there to do skillfully, appropriately now. Maybe what you need is a cup of tea or a cup of coffee to help you.
Or a movie.
Or a walk, or to call someone up. But if you can be present as you're doing it, then right there, you're not caught up in the characteristics of thinking that if I do this, this is going to change me. If you're not caught up in that self-centeredness, then you can see and be as you are. You can non-abide, if I use that kind of fancy word, in your ideas of what's characteristic, what's here, what's not here, what's good, what I should do.
I just know that sometimes it's not skillful for me to sit down and watch a movie because it's I'm trying to not
trying
deal
to
with what's here. And I know it's not skillful because when it's over, there's more suffering. It's almost like
you're guilty.
Well, no, it's almost like. Well, that isn't how things are, and that's not how things are in your life, and that it just caused more suffering.
Well, if you can see that. And if you're able to do something else, do so. That's great. And no need to add on judgment or more than that when you haven't seen it until you see it. When you see it, fine. It's always a matter of what we see and can do right now. And what we can do, not what someone else could do or some idealized image of who we are. Because that becomes another way to judge rather than to be where we are. See? That's another way to abide and get caught in purity and impurity.
You talk about dealing with your anxiety. You're watching a movie, escape, avoiding, or dealing with your anxiety. Now, what is that? What is dealing with your anxiety? Is that a fair question?
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm just saying that it's not something bad to do. It's just.
Not helpful
with me.
It doesn't solve the problem.
It can sometimes increase the suffering. But
because you feel guilty about that.
It is a thing that, it's just everyone has things that they do to push away.
Yeah, and it's to be able to see the difference between pushing away and seeing what's called for out of being present. See, sometimes what's called for, well, for instance, because of the eye surgeries and eye problems, I tend to have eye pains throughout and head pains at times during the day. And there are a certain, usually by mid-afternoon, my head and eyes are such that doing something, even like watching TV or a movie for 10, 15 minutes or longer, helps the eye. Because it requires the eye to look in a different way than when it looks up close to a book or a computer or even vegetables that I'm cooking. It's cutting. It's a different visual process. So I just do that. And I didn't understand that this was useful, but the doctor, after my first operation, said, you know, do this. You can, because the eye will do things different. This was before I had any pain. This was just on the basis of mechanics of the eye. So it's just to see what works and what's called for. So I notice when that's there. It's not always there, but sometimes 2-3 in the afternoon, there's that pain. There's that stress. And it's just seeing what works and what's called for in each moment when, as you say, agitation arises, or when anger arises, or when fear is there, or when we're caught up in whatever. Maybe sitting helps, maybe taking a walk helps, maybe talking to the person that you're upset with, just being there with them and letting them talk, despite the fact that you're ready to scream at them. It's the non-abiding in our ideas and self-centeredness that allows it to arise and pass, allows it to be transparent. So, to use Belinda's words, we can be trusting in the moment, or we can be clear in the and open in this moment to the universe that's unfolding. Did you want to say something?
Examples of suppression, whether it's the neuros or watching a movie or alcohol, or so even suppression then could be a part of our pathway.
According to circumstances, I mean, sometimes you take for instance, you'll take an anti-inflammatory or a painkiller because that's, you know, when you have certain muscle injuries, if I could use an analogy, you sometimes have to take anti-inflammatories for several days, not because that's going to heal the muscles, but because it reduces the inflammation so that the muscles can heal themselves naturally. And that if, I shouldn't talk since we've got a pharmacist here who can tell me more scientifically, but my understanding from talking to my to doctors and others is that there's the process that in one sense, in order to allow the natural healing, you have to let certain things get out of the way so that the natural process can function.
Okay, I like that analogy. That's good.
Well, in one sense, when we sit, we allow thoughts to arise and pass. We don't try to stop thinking, because that just means we fight against, we try to create certain states of mind. We believe that certain states of mind are good and certain are bad. Now, yes, there are states of mind that create, if we act them out, that create more suffering and harm. If we're angry, it's valuable not to spew that out at others, or at least to notice when we're doing it and stop at that point. However, if we try to push down anger when it appears, forcefully keep it away, it might be temporarily, provisionally okay for a few moments, but if that's the ongoing way we deal with it, then it only comes out in other ways. Our practice is to sit and to allow it to arise and pass, not to hold on to it, to allow, to release it, so that just like clouds come and go, and sometimes the sky is cloudy and sometimes it's clear, the clouds of thoughts, agitation, self-centeredness come and go and become, as if I say it, transparent. If they're transparent, they're no big deal. They don't hinder us. They don't blind us. We're not caught up. And in a sense, they dissipate of themselves. Then we can be clear and open in the midst of whatever appears outside or inside. Or at least we can see what's appearing, what we're caught up in, and act skillfully, make the practice effort that's called for by this moment of the universe appearing as it does right now, appearing as it does in terms of the internal emotion, thought states, appearing as it does in terms of the people and the characteristics and the situation, conditions, which are ongoing change. See, if we then sometimes we're serving people, sometimes we're being served. Sometimes we're being helped, and sometimes we're helping. Sometimes we are free to take whatever position, responsibility, activity is called for because we can see and be the present moment. And that's our life opportunity, to serve and appreciate life. Okay. Thank you all. Caught in self-centered dream.
Copyright 2012, Elihu Genmio Smith.